Hi, I'm Kate Snow, NBC News anchor and host of the NBC News podcast, The Drink. This month, I'm sitting down with the hilarious Leslie Jones. We chat about her remarkable journey from her childhood to family hardships to the unexpected, almost accidental road that led her to comedy. From her unforgettable years at Saturday Night Live to her new show, Roast My Rental, about vacation rentals gone terribly wrong. It is a funny, candid conversation, and I hope you'll give it a listen. Join us for The Drink, listen, and follow now wherever you get your podcasts.
I really love the Start Today app.
They care about how I feel.
It's the staff on the app. It's the connections you make.
Without good mental and physical health, you have nothing.
It tells me how to cook to keep myself healthy.
I look at my app and I'm like, wow, I didn't know I did 7,000 steps today.
Start Today meets you where you are. Download the Start Today Wellness app now on your Apple or Android device. Terms apply. See app for details.
I'm Craig Melvin.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
I've always been a glass half full kind of guy. And now I'm talking to some people who look at the world that way too. Some really fascinating folks who shared their defining moments, their triumphs, their challenges. Their stories are funny and quite candid. So I hope you'll join me each week. And who knows, you might just come away with your own glass half full.
Search Glass Half Full with Craig Melvin from today on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Trial, a special series from Dateline True Crime Weekly, bringing you daily coverage from the Sean Combs racketeering trial. He has pleaded not guilty to all the charges against him. I'm Andrea Canning, and it's Friday, May 30th. Just a heads up, in this episode, we're going to be talking about some graphic details and harrowing subject matter. This morning, the prosecution witness using the pseudonym Mia was back on the stand. Then, after a couple of hours, the defense began its cross-examination of her. As it was starting, attorney Brian Steele asked the jurors to open binders that had been left on their chairs. NBC News correspondent Chloe Malas is going to tell us what was in those binders and more. She has just come out of the federal courthouse in Lower Manhattan. Hey, Chloe.
Hey, Andrea.
So yesterday, Mia was, as you told us, she was very emotional throughout the day. How was she today?
Today, she was still looking down, not making eye contact with the jury, with Diddy. Her voice still would sometimes seem like it was trembling, and she was sort of whispering at times. But overall, she was pretty strong and stoic, and especially during cross-examination, there were times where she was really talking back to Brian Steele and holding her own. Mm.
Today, the prosecutor pulled out texts between Mia and Combs, Mia and others who worked at Combs's company. What was that all about?
These are text messages that date back to the time of the allegations that she's talking about. And it's both Mia and also Diddy's text messages. Some of the texts are threatening. He's telling her that her job's at stake. He's angry. He's going to fire her. He wants nothing to do with her. In one instance, he writes to her, "If you don't call me now, I'm going to tell everything. And don't ever speak to me again. You have 2 minutes." This is in reference to her being in South Africa with Cassie, and he was trying to get a hold of Cassie. And according to Mia, when he says, "I'm going to tell everything," he means exposing their sexual relationship. And she says those were sexual assaults.
There is one text the prosecutor showed the jury, which Mia sent Combs and his chief of staff. You can really see the panic or hear the panic in her words, even though it's in a text message.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that we're really seeing now is that he was relentless in terms of the work environment for his employees, and especially for Mia, who was his personal assistant for all of these years, that he would call her dozens of times in succession and write the same text over and over again. It would say something like, "Call me now, call me now, call me now, please." In one instance, she wakes up to, I think, like 48 missed calls while she's in South Africa. And she's like, "I just woke up." And you can see her worry about her job. You can see her trying to defend herself. And she writes back, "I was exhausted. There's a time change where I am right now. I would never avoid you. I would never not answer your calls." I mean, I think that when you're talking about panic, we definitely see it when she messages Christina Karam, who was Diddy's chief of staff. She says, "I'm having night terrors about Diddy."
Yeah, because this is what she's waking up to, right?
I mean, it's totally abnormal. Imagine your boss calling you 48 times. But she also said that she felt like Diddy was under the influence. He was slurring his words. You know, so we don't know Diddy's state of mind at the time of these actions.
Yesterday, we were talking about how some of Mia's testimony echoes Cassie Ventura's. They both stuck around for years after they alleged Sean Combs began abusing them. How did Mia explain that when the prosecutor asked her, you know, why she stayed?
Well, she actually said that she had tried to quit before, and she talked about an incident on the island of St. Barts where she was on a yacht off the coast with Kim Porter, who was the mother of some of his children, and some of Combs's friends, and that Diddy was screaming at her while she was counting some money of his, and he kept telling her that she was counting it wrong and then threatening her and threatening her job. And so she actually went to go hide from him and was begging the captain to get her a tender, which is a little boat, to take her to shore. And finally, they get her on that little boat, and it takes her to shore, and she realizes she doesn't have her passport, that she had left it with the head of security back on the yacht. So she said that she's tried to escape, but she was never successful in doing so.
And there was a Q&A where the prosecutor asked her, you know, could you get other jobs? And, you know, her response was no, right?
Yeah, she says that he would have destroyed my reputation. I was scared of him.
Mia testified that she was eventually laid off in 2017 from the company and that she had to fight for back pay.
Yeah, so she said that she was so upset, actually, that Diddy was not the one to deliver this news to her, that she felt like it was a real betrayal. But at this point, she's out of a job. She doesn't think she can get a job with anybody else. And so she hires an employment attorney who tries to help her get the money that she feels like she's deserved. And so this goes on for 9 months. And eventually there's some mediation. She actually asks for $10 million, but in the end, she only got $400,000 and $200,000 went to her attorneys.
What was with the $10 million then? Is this for sort of damages? Why so much?
Yeah, so she says that she did bring up the fact that she had been emotionally and physically abused to her employment attorneys, but she did not say that she had been sexually assaulted. She reiterated that that was something that she just planned to take with her to her grave. And so this $10 million number was arbitrary. It was something she said that her attorneys came up with. Ultimately, she was paid for bonuses owed and all of the overtime that she was owed.
Chloe, Mia also testified about other people who worked for Combs, and you mentioned already one of them, his chief of staff, a woman named Christina Karam.
Right, and so her nickname is KK, and she appears to be across a lot of the communication between Mia and Diddy, and Mia at times would forward emails or things that she had written to Diddy for her line of sight. So it could be interesting to see, will she testify at some point?
And Mia brought up another name you've mentioned quite a few times now during this trial, D-Rock, and that is Combs' head of security. How did he come into play in Mia's testimony today?
This was fascinating. Mia has this exchange with D-Rock, who reaches out to her right after Cassie filed her civil lawsuit in November of 2023. And on November 30th, D-Rock reaches out to her and is like, hey, have you been? But they haven't talked in 2 years. So she says he was trying to tell her that Cassie and Diddy's relationship, although toxic at times, that this was just like a normal couple, that their fights were normal. And he said that other people actually agreed with him in their inner circle. She said that a big red flag went off for her and that she just stayed silent on that call.
Combs settled the lawsuit with no admission of wrongdoing. And we learned a couple of weeks ago that as a part of the settlement, he paid Cassie $20 million. How does Mia fit into this, if at all?
I think it was pretty clear to anybody who read Cassie's civil lawsuit that law enforcement was probably going to look into this and do some sort of investigation into her claims, especially once CNN released that really shocking security footage of her being beaten in that hotel hallway in 2016. And so if there was any evidence to back them up or people who'd corroborate that, he'd be in jeopardy, right?
So Mia is testifying that her interpretation of that phone call is that Combs wants to make sure she's not a threat. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, she felt as though Diddy was reaching out to her to try to silence her. And D-Rock actually offers to send her some money, which she declines. But he doesn't say that the money is for her to not participate in any sort of investigation. He just says he wants to help her out. She's like, it's okay. I do have trouble paying my bills right now, but I don't want your help. It's all good. So she never accepts any money. She never gets on the phone with Diddy. After a couple phone calls and a few text messages, they left her alone, it seems.
Is the government alleging here then that Combs was obstructing justice?
I don't know if that's what they're saying with these particular messages. Obstruction of justice is one of the RICO crimes that prosecutors explicitly named in their indictment. And witness tampering is one of the allegations that the government leveled trying to get Diddy's bail applications denied. Prosecutors have said multiple times that he was obstructing justice from behind bars at his prison in Brooklyn, that he was trying to get to witnesses. So I don't know if these messages really illustrate obstruction, but it definitely shows that he was trying to reach out to people.
Okay, Chloe, we have a lot more to come. When we come back, the defense begins its cross-examination of Mia, and it includes those binders left on the jurors' chairs.
Hey guys, Willie Geist here, reminding you to check out the Sunday Sit Down podcast. On this week's episode, I get together with the hilarious Ken Jeong to talk through a career of unforgettable roles, from the Hangover movies to the cult favorite show Community, and his latest in the Netflix cultural sensation, K-pop Demon Hunters. You can find our conversation for free wherever you download your podcasts.
Chloe, tell us about these binders and what was inside them.
So when the jurors came in for Brian Steele's cross-examination, there were these binders on each of their chairs. And in them were all these different social media posts of Mia's. So this whole afternoon of cross-examination, Steele just attacked Mia's credibility by talking about all these things that she had posted on Instagram during her 8 years working for him.
And these posts were, she put them up pretty close in time to some of the incidents she testified about.
Yeah, I mean, this was really fascinating. Brian Steele spent the entire cross-examination showing Mia all of these different things that she had posted on Instagram, wishing Diddy a happy birthday, telling him that she loved him, saying, you're my mentor. You know, you're such a great guy. I'll always be there for you. Thank you for all the things that you've ever done for me. And so Steele's like, how can you call the person who assaulted you your mentor? So, I mean, things got really heated, but she stood firm and she said that social media is not a true depiction of what was really going on in her life.
Steele also pointed out that this wasn't all bad for Mia. There were times where she was enjoying herself, where she liked her job.
I mean, it's really complicated, right? She says the highs were high and the lows were low. She keeps saying that exact quote. And she says, yeah, I mean, I was traveling, but this was part of my job. I was drinking wine in this photo, but, you know, Diddy wasn't with us in this moment. And Steele says, well, how do you have a good moment when you're terrified? Because you're saying this is your abuser who has repeatedly sexually assaulted you, who's ruining your life. And she says, it's easy because the dynamic would shift. When things were good, I felt really safe. You almost forget about those things.
Steele really pushed back on Mia's rape claims.
I mean, there were multiple times where Steele's voice was raised and he was like, you weren't sexually assaulted, were you? You weren't raped, really, were you? And she's like, I stand by my testimony. You know, these things did happen to me. And he said, you know, how do you forget about waking up with a man on top of you? She says, it's too horrible to think about. You want it to go away. So when she would post pictures on trips or wish him a happy birthday, she's basically saying that behind the scenes, it was awful, but publicly she's cherry picking the best parts.
The defense seems to be trying to show the jury this different version of Mia. You know, yesterday she was sobbing on the stand. Today they're trying to show her as this woman who had a fabulous career. You know, she's posting like crazy, all these wonderful things she's doing, and seems to be enjoying herself working for Combs.
And that is something that the jury is going to have to figure out, right? I mean, she's far more engaged today. She's kind of talking back to Brian Steele, and she's being confident, and she's saying, yep. I mean, literally, she'll say, yep, I posted that. And she's like, I am dealing with this in therapy right now. I'm still unpacking everything that happened to me. I suffer from major PTSD. And at one point, she's like, you weren't sexually assaulted. She says that to Brian Steele.
We obviously cannot read the minds of jurors, but how do you think that they were reacting to the defense's cross-examination of Mia?
So some of these jurors do not have a good poker face. And I was talking to some people who came out of the courtroom this afternoon while I was outside doing some TV segments. And they said that some of the jurors were actually kind of laughing and smirking during Brian Steele's, really aggressive cross-examination of her. That there are a few that appear to be pro-Diddy. But again, that could be a facade.
Yeah, it's interesting trying to read jurors. You know, you never know. The trial is getting just a ton of attention. Today, it made it all the way to the White House. A Fox News reporter asked President Trump in the Oval Office if he would consider pardoning Combs. What was the president's answer?
I mean, in the wake of the Chrisleys being pardoned, Andrea, this was a perfectly expected question for him to be asked. And he said, nobody's talked to me about it yet. Nobody's asked. But he said he would certainly look at the facts. He said that he hasn't seen or spoken to Diddy in years and that he wasn't following the trial closely. But he was open to looking into it.
Okay. We look forward to your color and analysis next week. We hope everyone has a great weekend. Thank you, Chloe, for everything all week. And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back with a new episode on Monday. If you want to read the latest developments and analysis from inside the courtroom, check out the NBC newsletter, Diddy on Trial. Go to nbcnews.com/Diddy to find that. On Trial is produced by Franny Kelly with help from the Dateline True Crime Weekly team. Our senior producers are Allison Orr and Liz Brown-Kurloff. Original music by Jesse McGinty. Paul Ryan is executive producer, and Liz Cole is senior executive producer of Dateline.